Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Tim Hardin, who's Vice President and Head of Corporate Banking at SPD Silicon Valley Bank in China. And you're in Shanghai at the moment, Tim?
I am sitting in beautiful Shanghai this evening.
Great, Tim. Thanks very much for joining us. Could you give us a brief introduction to yourself first, please?
Sure. So I am, as you said, the Head of Corporate Banking here at SPD Silicon Valley Bank. I have been with Silicon Valley Bank, or one of its interests, this joint venture being one of them. I joined in 1995, so nearly 22 years at this point with one version or another of Silicon Valley Bank. I'm currently with the joint venture that we formed in 2012 with Shanghai Pudong Development Bank, SPDB. So it's the 50-50 joint venture between Silicon Valley Bank in the Silicon Valley, California, U.S., and Shanghai Pudong Development Bank, which is the sixth largest bank in China, headquartered here in Shanghai.
Great. And Silicon Valley Bank, I know I've worked with for quite a number of years now. Your insights into technology and coming out of the traditional Silicon Valley. Can you give us a bit of an introduction to describe Silicon Valley Bank globally and its operations in China, then why you're there now?
Sure. So Silicon Valley Bank was founded in the 1980s in, as you might guess, the Silicon Valley. It's focused on the investor community around venture capital, first working with the investors themselves, and then also directly with their portfolio companies throughout the world. So in the U.S., they've got roughly 60% market share of the companies that go public on NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange that are technology or TMT companies or life sciences companies. So they sit in sort of the catbird seat of the ecosystem in the U.S., and then from there have expanded globally into an office in London, which is their footprint for Europe today, an office in Tel Aviv for the Israeli market, an office in Beijing and Hong Kong for Silicon Valley Bank's business in Asia, and then the joint venture, as I described, between ourselves and Shanghai Pudong Development Bank, sitting here in Shanghai with a branch in Beijing and soon a branch in Shenzhen.
Great, excellent. So we can see you really sit in the center of the ecosystem here in coming from Silicon Valley. But what I'd like to sort of develop in the talk today is what you're seeing is developing sort of in China. And right up front, I really want to address the first comment that's often made to me when I sort of talk about what's happening in China. The response back from a lot is, oh, well, just China just copy products and software and that from the West. Do you believe this is true, and which sectors do you think is maybe changing and that in fastest?
So there's certainly been a history in the past of that being the case, where IP or intellectual property was not appropriately recognized in China, and so there was that aspect of copying. I have personally seen that fundamentally changing over the last, say, several years, and I'm seeing now business model innovation and technology innovation that's originating from China and moving outward from this market as it gains a foothold first domestically here in China and then in Southeast Asia and then potentially more broadly than that. Few industries specifically that have garnered the most press, so the sharing economy is one example, and the adaptation of shared bikes is I think the one company or the one group of companies that gets press globally, but it's much broader than that as well. I would say one area that I have found the most interesting of late is the life sciences industry. So China was one of the world's manufacturers and one of the world's labor markets, I guess you could say. And the life sciences industry here, say 5 years ago, was largely outsourced labor, highly skilled labor, but in the form of clinical research organizations for the large global drug companies, the Mercks and GSKs of the world, for example. And over the last several years, we've seen a lot of those scientists and practitioners migrate from the CROs into drug discovery, drug development companies of their own, which is really exciting to see.
No, I agree with you. I think my perspective I've seen as well is that, of course, China copied when they were catching up, but there again, we saw that the Americas copied the cotton looms from England during a previous century. But certainly, I'm certainly seeing now the speed and change in that within China is bringing those up to and leapfrogging. So, what are you seeing the tech and investment like in China? You know, how does it compare to the US, Europe, and other regions? You know, in terms of types of investments, valuations, and things like that.
I think it's comparable to many of those other markets. So, by way of background, I've actually had some personal responsibility in the European market and the Israeli market, as well as the U.S. market for Silicon Valley Bank. So I've kind of seen the ecosystems develop in each of those markets. And I would say that the China technology investment ecosystem around early stage ventures and venture capital is evolving. It's not quite caught up in terms of the level of sophistication of, say, the U.S. market or the Israeli market. One of the aspects of those markets that China does not have is a lot of repeat entrepreneurs and repeat support staff for entrepreneurs, say chief CFOs or VP engineering, VP sales, those types of roles for a startup. And many of the startups in China, the people that sit in those seats are in their first startup, whereas in the UK, mm-hmm. And even more so in the U.S., the people that sit in those seats are often in their second or third startup. And so there's the pace at which they can bring a company forward is maybe a little bit different than it is here in those aspects.
Yeah, in terms of valuations, what sort of valuations do you think you're seeing in China compared to some of those other markets? What's the sort of ranking in terms of multiples? Or,
well, it's funny that you say that, because I've never been in a market in which the investors were not complaining about the valuations. the same is true here. And I was with an investor that just last week, actually, that has a global footprint with funds in China, funds in the U.S., and funds in Israel and India. And they were commenting that that really the U.S. and China market are largely on par at the sort of Series A, Series B stage. And then if you look up market from there, the unicorn stages that you see globally, certainly the valuations that some of the larger companies in China are garnering are comparable to those in the U.S. Certainly the very largest still sit in the U.S. Nobody's approaching Uber at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Building on one of your points there, actually, about the depth of the ecosystem and repeat entrepreneurs, I've had some relationship with people who were involved in the initial start of Alibaba, and also had people from Tencent speaking on programs that have been doing in China over the last sort of few years. I'm seeing some people out of those areas now, particularly one person who was the COO of Alibaba is now very much in the ecosystem and supporting a number of startups and that there. So I think that's coming along. It's just it hasn't, it's only been about 10 years that these Chinese startups have been there. But that ecosystem, I think, is now building. And will come in the next decade.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, but it's really someone who has left Alibaba, for example, who has left Tencent to start a company, and as they're recruiting a CFO, the person that sits in that chair is maybe the first time in a startup environment as a CFO, and the person that's the VP of sales is maybe the first time they've sat in that chair as a VP of sales for a startup, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So in BAT, Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent, you know, leading Chinese online businesses, which are built up, you know, in China behind the great Chinese sort of internet wall. For those listeners who've not spent time in China, could you give us a brief introduction to their scale, speed of change, and different business models they're seeing? Because certainly in the last couple of times that I've been there, I now can't sort of go around without needing to have an Alipay or a WeChat payment sort of account. What sort of things are you seeing there now as a person who's looking at it from the outside, looking into China about those organizations?
Sure. So those are the three largest internet companies in China, BAT, and they're comparable to, say, the Google, Amazon, Apple, Facebook sort of group in the U.S. in terms of both where they sit in the technology, large corporate technology ecosystem, and in their valuations. I saw last week that Tencent has just surpassed Facebook in terms of market cap, so they're very comparable in that respect, and I would say that they line up along these lines. I would say Baidu started in search and is sort of the Google counterpart in China. They have been very active as an investor and acquirer of other companies as they've grown. Still focused on search is really their bread and butter cash cow, but now making a very strong play into artificial intelligence. So if you look at their more recent investments and acquisitions, they're focused very, very directly on the AI space, artificial intelligence space, along the same front that Google is targeting. Alibaba is really the e-commerce juggernaut, so they would line up with Amazon, both in terms of the types of things that they do and their focus on e-commerce on their investment platform as well. The one thing that Alibaba does quite differently from Amazon is that they're also one of the largest consumer payment gateways. So nearly every, actually even below the middle class, but certainly every middle class and up Chinese local would have an Alipay account. And they would use that Alipay account on their phone for mobile payments. And they would buy everything from the fruit at the corner stand to their phone. They'd pay their phone bill on it. They'd pay their credit card on it. They get their Didi, which is the Uber equivalent of a taxi in China, and they would use it exclusively as a source of payment, either using Alipay or the competitive product from Tencent, which is the third in the BAT. So Tencent is the largest social network in China with a product called WeChat, or Weixin as it's called in Chinese. And everyone in China has a WeChat account, and that is how they share, that's how they message each other, that's how they share their moments, which are like Instagram or Facebook posts, and that is the other form of payment that they use. So WeChat has a payment function, and Alipay has a payment function, and nearly every person in China has both, and nearly every retailer in China, from the largest to literally the very smallest, can take either Alipay or WeChat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in terms of scale, like we've recently seen comparing Singles Day, which is the 11th of November in China, where the sort of online sales drive sort of happens, comparing that to Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Some of the stats that I saw is that the online purchases in China were something like a factor of 10 times larger than what they were in the US for the equivalent of the time periods for these peaks of online. So we're seeing the scale and the speed of growth and the online type approach in China being, you know, considerable scale now, aren't we?
We are, and I would say I have not actually seen the breakdown in this respect, but I would guess that a fairly significant portion of the Singles Day 11/11 purchases were made on a mobile device as well, using Alipay or WeChat Pay, with the purchase made on a phone or an iPad.
No, certainly that's the case. And I say back to my comment that now when I visit China, I'm finding it more difficult to do things without having a WeChat or Alipay sort of type payments or system.
Yeah, when I first lived in China in 2011, 12, and 13. When I left in 2013, it was an entirely cash-based economy, and I came back in earlier this year, and cash is all but gone. There's a supermarket in our building here downstairs that's large, majority owned by Alibaba, and they only take Alipay. They won't accept cash.
No, I've found that in a number of places and that now. So in terms of the, so we've seen the scale, we've seen the speed of change, we've seen the breadth of these sort of Chinese companies. In my book that around purpose to performance, innovative new value chains, I talk about sort of the Chinese tech companies like these and like Huawei and the high speed trains and the green tech. I've used the term enter the dragon, where I think Chinese companies now could come out and dominate particular sectors. Would you see that as a case now that we're going to see Chinese companies coming out and dominating outside of China, not necessarily the US and Europe, but in other countries and that first? Well, what's your perspective on Chinese companies coming out?
Oh, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, certainly they can scale domestically, and achieve great scale domestically, but we've already seen certainly all three of the BAT investing outside of China into similar businesses. So, for example, Tencent, which is the gaming company, bought Supercell, which is a large European gaming company. They've invested in other e-commerce companies. Both Tencent and Alibaba have invested significant funds into Flipkart in India and Lazada in Indonesia, for example. And I think the investment is the first foray into those markets, and they follow with their technology and business models. I think it's inevitable that they reach the West. I don't think their intent is to jump across the pond directly from China into the US, but rather throughout Southeast Asia. Having said that, Tencent did buy, or Alibaba, sorry, did buy MoneyGram in the US to gain access to some of the payments options in the US. And it would not surprise me if in the next year or two we start to see either WeChat Pay or Alipay make a foray into Western markets directly.
Another aspect that we've talked about before is, I've outlined the term innovative new value chains, which is what I mean, connecting new technologies, different startups and corporates to create different business models. In digital health, I give an example in my book about, cardiac health, about having, monitors on your body, sending data into the cloud and having a new relationship with the customer. The sorts of things around electric autonomous vehicles and car sharing, there are now some fundamental different business models. Where do you think that China will play within these innovative new value chains in terms of manufacturing, tech, all the social sort of side of things? Where do you think China might play within these value chains now?
I think they'll play ultimately on both fronts. You'll see large Chinese companies, both SOEs and POEs, so large privately owned enterprises, reaching into other markets to pick up technology to grow beyond their own R&D capabilities. And then you'll see a number of those global corporates, as you know, reaching into China, looking for both access to the market, certainly, because China is a very large market, but also now access to technologies and innovation that are being brought forward in China before they're brought forward elsewhere. So I'll give you one example. I don't have
Please.
permission, I don't have the permission to give the name, but it's one of the largest, if not the largest, furniture manufacturers and retailers in China. And they've come to us saying, you know, we recognize that we're not in the flow of information that we think we need around what you've described, innovative new value chains. And they've asked
Right.
us to help them source, for example, IoT and connected home relationships in the U.S. technology market. So that's an example of a very large Chinese entity
Yep.
realizing exactly what you're describing and asking for access to contacts and understanding of technology that's going to be potentially revolutionary for their business in other markets. And
yeah.
I know you've
yeah.
been I was going to say, I know you've been active on the other side, bringing large companies into China to source some of those same sorts of developing technologies.
Yeah, very much so. So, you know, when we both met a few weeks back, I was out there with a major oil company looking at how automotive and this sort of sector is changing. And in fact, I'm working with a utilities business and a furniture business from the West now, both looking at the similar perspective, as you said, where your Chinese organization is looking from the other aspect. So I think there's great opportunities or challenges now for companies that don't grasp how these business models and technologies are going to be changing. So good. So are you finding good cases of global corporates engaging well or poorly with the Chinese ecosystem?
No, I think for the most part, they seem to be engaging well. There's the ones that don't make the headlines, right? The GSK example from a couple of years ago created
mm-hmm.
quite a buzz here. There's a big social media snafu with McDonald's holding company changing its name here a few weeks ago that was very entertaining for the locals. So there are certainly situations in which the large corporates land here with a flop, but for the most part,
right.
you know, I see them doing quite well as they reach out to look for relationships and or technologies.
Okay, and in terms of the operation of the traditional corporate venture capital of investing in funds or doing direct investments into startups, you know, outside organizations trying to invest into China startups, that's a bit more of a challenge than doing it in Silicon Valley. Any particular insights that you've got on corporates trying to do traditional CVC into China?
So the ones that have been successful have feet on the ground. There's not, it's really challenging to do that from outside of the market. And so,
yeah.
Companies like, you know, Intel, for example, is probably one of the best examples of success on the CVC side. And I had breakfast with the CFO of Intel a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, 25% and growing of their market is in China. So for them, it's absolutely critical that they're here on the ground investing in new technologies and in the market.
Yeah, no, very much agree. I met up with Intel in Beijing as well when I was over there sort of recently. So having feet on the ground, building the relationships to maybe doing investment via some other fund in China, but having your feet on the ground there with them is a sensible next step. But the step of being able to do direct investments with an RMB Chinese currency fund, you know, is a different approach and something that needs to be considered. But I think, as we've talked about here, it's a place where organizations need to be building that understanding and capability and relationships. Great.
I mean, certainly the companies here are more complex early because, as you said, with the nature of the currency challenges with the RMB and U.S. dollar access or lack of access, they get quite complicated quite young, but there's still
yeah.
an opportunity for a foreign dollar or sterling denominated investor to be on the ground here and actively engaging with even very young companies.
Great, great. And I say Silicon Valley Bank and you in China are a great part of the ecosystem to understand and connect with the appropriate sides there as well. Because like I said, you described you're on both sides of the transaction, either helping the startups or you're there with the funds and that. So
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Exactly.
Great, Tim. Thanks so much for those insights and overviews. And when you're not working in the China tech and investment ecosystem, what are you doing to relax on that now, when, you know, particularly in China?
I am actually a cyclist, if you can believe that, and occasionally braving the roads here, either on my own bike or a Mobike or Ofo, one of the shared bikes, and when the roads are not cooperative, I ride in an online game called Zwift, which is a lot of fun. I have no ownership or interest in that game. I just think it's fun. So,
oh, great. All right. Well, Tim, thanks so much for your insight. I appreciate it.
You bet. Happy to help.